Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You know, Hub, I think you hit a great point there.
Hub Arkish.
The Arkish family in pro football media journalism has been around almost as long as the game itself.
670 The Score's NFL Insider.
I think the Packers have got problems on defense. I think they've got, you know, two great pass rushers. But other than that, it's not an impressive unit.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
I have a lot of Packer friends up in Wisconsin, unfortunately. And they're all bragging, saying that this tight end that the Packers got is going to be a way better prospect than the ones that the Bears got, this guy that they got from Notre Dame.
So, Mike, you have a comment on the fact that your Packer friends know more about the draft than Ryan Pace? Who cares? Yeah, but my buddy said so. Ryan Pace must be nuts.
Hub Arkish, that's getting better than this.
Hub Arkish with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
We'll get to Hub in just 1 second. Mac, did I say reducement instead of reduction in the last segment?
Yeah, but you were on a roll, so I did not want to interrupt. That's one of the benefits for you of the COVID-19 pandemic, Danny. I'm not in the same room with you, so I don't want to distract you by correcting a made-up word. Reducement actually is real easy to understand. I've gotten used to you. Okay.
Yeah. Ish.
English?
You're
That's
in the ballpark.
Impossible.
You're warm usually. Reduce. I knew what you meant. So I kinda,
I believe,
you know,
the point of language is to communicate a thought.
Yeah,
so,
I know
as
you
long
do.
As you know what I meant, it works.
I know you do. Yeah, $300,000 worth of education there at Syracuse, and that's how you feel about it. But anyway, that's not.
And
why
I'm sitting here across from you, virtually.
Yeah, well, I know, public school kid, and I'm wearing these headphones, which officially are my Danny Parkins decoder rings. So I know what you're saying whenever I slip these on.
It's perfect. This hour on The Score brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56David.com. That's 56David.com. Without further ado, our friend, our football insider, Hub Arkish, on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. He absolutely crushed our draft coverage over the weekend. Did you enjoy the virtual draft, Hub?
I did, guys. I came to it skeptical. Wasn't sure if it was such a good idea. I think the timing of it, in terms of it being a release and a distraction for us from everyday life, the way that they presented it, some of the new wrinkles that they brought into it. Now, in fairness, as you just said, Danny, I was on the air pretty much the whole time on the radio, so all I saw was the video. I didn't hear the audio part of it. But I thought they did a great job with it. And most importantly, it certainly didn't hurt anybody, and it was so much fun. And you look at the viewership that I think clearly the NFL got it right.
Yeah, and glad you enjoyed it. We enjoyed it. It's a thumbs up. And I want you in a few minutes to take a whack at some of the newest additions to the Bears, some undrafted, some free agents whose, man, their all-name team just keeps getting more interesting. But how about I tell you what I heard Thursday night? 30 seconds after the Bears, Friday night, after they chose Cole Kmet, I went out to the garage and turned the radio on and had a smoke or two. I wanted to hear what you guys were saying about it. And here's what I heard from you. I heard a conflicted reporter. I heard a guy who is a football man first, but also a guy who's in touch with the human condition, who was fighting the urge to criticize the pick because maybe you're suspicious. It's falling into sentimental play because he's a local kid and his dad briefly played for the Bears. Do I have the right man?
Well, I think everything about that is right except for the reasoning. I wasn't concerned about sentiment. The thing I was the most upset about was they didn't take Jalen Johnson, who was clearly the best player on the board, you know, and so the fact that they came back and still got him seven picks later made me feel a lot better about it. I loved Denzel Mims, the wide receiver. I don't think if Denzel Mims reaches his ceiling and Cole Kmet reaches his ceiling, Kmet will have a bigger impact on the Bears. So I didn't dislike the pick. I also had some confliction because I really liked the kid out of Florida Atlantic, the Bryant kid, who obviously I was wrong because a number of teams chose tight ends before Harrison Bryant before he came off in the fourth round. And so I was good with the pick. I just wasn't turning somersaults about it. I'm still not turning somersaults about it, but I do feel better about it now as a little time has gone by. I've been able to do some more homework. I think they got the best tight end in the draft, a kid with a very, very high ceiling who has a much higher floor than Adam Shaheen did. And so at 43, I don't have a problem with it. I feel much better that they got Jalen Johnson, too. It's not something I'm going to turn somersaults over until we see what kind of player this kid is.
Do you think they overdrafted Kmet in terms of, would he have been available at 50? Would he have been available in the third round? Like, where do you think the rest of the league slotted Cole Kmet?
You know, Danny, I maybe they could have flipped him and gotten Johnson in 43 and Kmet at 50. There's no guarantee. I don't think there's any way Cole Kmet was going past 50 to 55. I don't know. He might have gone 44 for all I know. So the spot where they took him doesn't trouble me. You know, when you look at these draft boards and, you know, I'm fortunate to get to talk to enough NFL folks that I have a sense of what, you know, a number of teams' boards look like. Any one of them will tell you that, you know, when you've got players stacked, let's say, between 43 and 53, it becomes a matter of taste. You know, it's kind of chocolate and vanilla. It's not like there's a clear choice there. So I don't think he was overdrafted at all. I just wasn't convinced that it was the best option. But since they, again, I don't want to be redundant, but they got the best option seven picks later. So that's what made me feel a lot better about it.
Do you feel both should be able to be starters from the get-go, or will that take some time?
I think Jalen Johnson, if medically cleared, you know, he is coming off the shoulder surgery, which, by the way, folks, it's not a serious procedure. He should be fine. The doctors are saying full football activities by August. He could start training camp on the PUP list if it starts on time. But if he's completely cleared and gets a full camp in, I expect Jalen Johnson to be the day one starter at cornerback. It's hard to say with Kmet because I don't think, you know, guys, this brings into focus even more what the Jimmy Graham signing is all about. They didn't sign Jimmy Graham to be a tight end. They signed him to be a receiver, you know, and he'll line up in various tight end formations. But, you know, whether the first play of the first game, they've got Graham and Demetrius Harris on the field, Kmet and Graham, just Kmet, maybe even, I don't know, one of J.P. Holtz or Ben Broniker is going to make the team to share playing time at the Y with Cole Kmet. So I don't know who the opening day starter is, but I do expect Kmet to get significant playing time in the opening game. And then it's about his development. This kid, his ceiling is really high, but he's not there yet. You know, he did have, I don't know if you'd call it a breakout junior year at Notre Dame, but he took a huge leap forward, but he still has so much to learn. I got to visit, not personally, but Brian Kelly had a media call a couple hours ago, and I just finished writing a column on it. Some of his answers were really interesting. And Kelly's focus is all about this kid's upside. You know, and one of the things he points out is that it wasn't really until about a year and a half ago that he chose to focus on football over baseball. You know, he tried to play both for a while. He wasn't sure. His brother is going to Notre Dame as a baseball player. Would he stay and play with him? And so there's so much more for this young man to learn. And the other thing I had forgotten, guys, I came away kind of pumped, is that Brian Kelly was Travis Kelce's coach at Cincinnati before he got to Notre Dame. And so you can bet that, you know, whether it was Matt Nagy or Ryan Pace or Bears Scouts, that they went deep with Kelly on this evaluation. And to me, I mean, it doesn't mean a whole lot, but it is kind of intriguing because Kelly was not shy about comparing him to Kelce.
And he said he compared favorably to him?
He did. As a matter of fact, the exact quote, if you want to give me a second, I'll find it for you, but it was something to the effect that I've coached Travis Kelce, Tyler Eifert, and Kyle Rudolph. Several have been all pros, and I think Cole Kmet is right in line with those guys. And quote, that's almost an exact quote.
All right. Hub, we've talked about the Bears adding depth to the offensive line. Enter Arlington Hambright out of Colorado, Lechavius Simmons out of Tennessee State, and Badara Traore, I don't know how you pronounce it, Traore, out of Boston College, or ASA College. I'm not sure where. He's from Boston, but he's one of the undrafted guys. Which of those three offensive linemen interests you the most?
Well, Badara is actually from LSU.
LSU, was, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, you're kind of half right, because he was the one of the top-rated offensive linemen coming out of junior college in 2018 before he transferred to LSU. He didn't beat out Sadiq Charles. I forget the other tackle's name, but you know, it wouldn't be the first time that a Power 5 school like LSU had three or four NFL offensive linemen on the depth chart. He's 6'5", 340 pounds, apparently reasonably athletic. He is an undrafted rookie free agent, but he probably is the most intriguing of the three. Arlington Hambright, maybe he eventually becomes a backup guard in the league. I'm not so sure about that. I really think that he is probably a practice squad target. Lechavius Simmons at Tennessee State was just, he wasn't highly publicized. But kind of like Beore, he's interesting. He's got really nice size at about 6'5", 6'4", and 3/4", maybe 3'10". He played all four offensive line positions except center at Tennessee State. And he's a good athlete. And of the three, he's the one that I've been told by several scouts appears to have a pretty nasty streak about him. And that's something you really like. So let's be honest about this, guys. When you take guys in the seventh round, it's mainly because you like them, but you don't have to compete for them as priority free agents, which is where Beore comes in. So all three are kind of similar prospects. Hambright probably intrigues me the least. The LSU kid, just with that sheer size as a potential right tackle, he's worth watching in training camp.
What did you make of the Packers taking Jordan Love?
Yeah, boy, it is. There's a lot of tentacles to this story, guys, because I mean, I had him ranked the 25th player on the board. So when you trade up to 26 and take him, and he's a quarterback to boot, I can't knock that. I don't think they overdrafted him. He is a fascinating prospect. He does have the possibility in a couple years of becoming a pretty good NFL quarterback. He's got some great traits. And so I don't fault him for drafting him where they did. The question is, when you're one game away from the Super Bowl and exactly, you are one of the worst run defenses in the league and your offense has struggled all year because you don't have enough receiving targets for Aaron Rodgers, who is going to be there at least two or three more years. He just did a four-year extension a year and a half ago, and they're committed to a bunch of money. Why are you drafting the quarterback of the future now, who is not a sure thing? Love is a pretty controversial prospect. You look at that 20 touchdown to 17 interception ratio his last year at Utah State, and that is not something that inspires great confidence in NFL, scouts and coaches. So it was a puzzling move. Then you come back in the second round. I love Dylan out of Boston College. I think he's got a chance to be a big-time NFL player. But what's the deepest position on the Packers' depth chart right now with Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams? Maybe are you drafting him to be a pure fullback? He's 245 pounds, but you don't draft fullbacks in the second round. And then they come back in the third round with an H-back after they just drafted, Segura, is that his name? They may have drafted a bunch of good football players, but none of them made sense for a team whose Super Bowl window may be open for another year or two and may be closing right now.
And lost its leading tackler, one of the NFL's leading tacklers for the last 4 or 5 years, Blake Martinez, who signed with the Giants. It is kind of remarkable when you're that close, but that's the way they're doing it.
Well, and you know what, Mac, and they've had some pretty good success doing it that way for three decades now. Nobody knew what Ron Wolf was doing when he traded for Brett Favre. And certainly, you know, people scratched their heads when they drafted Aaron Rodgers, who did need to wait 2 or 3 years, and clearly Love needs a couple years. So again, I'm not saying it's a bad pick, but you do have to add that Jordan Love is nowhere near the prospect Aaron Rodgers was. I mean, a lot of people weren't sure if Aaron Rodgers or Alex Smith should have been the first player overall in that draft. Obviously, Smith went number one, and it took him, you know, 5 or 6 years in getting to Kansas City before he arrived. Love is a high-ceiling guy. He's got some great traits, but Rodgers was a lot safer pick when they took him back in 05 than Love is now.
Hub, our audience and Mac and I have really enjoyed when I run a football theory past you, and you maybe engage, maybe don't, maybe you love it, maybe you shoot it down. Can I run a theory?
I could, but I don't really want to argue with you one way or the other. I don't think
that tickled Mac so much. So can I run a theory about the NFL drafts past you?
Of course, yeah. Okay. And by the way, if I don't engage, it's usually because I just don't have much to say about it. I enjoy the debates, and they're all in fun, and we all have our opinions. So, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. My theory is that the NFL draft is great, but what would be better is no draft at all. If there was rookie free agency, it would be fairer to the players because they would be able to, just like college recruitment, choose where they want to go, just like any other workforce in America. It would be more interesting for the fans because, as popular as the draft is, only one team and one fan base had a shot at Joe Burrow, whereas if everybody had a shot at Joe Burrow and you could free up, you know, rookie salary cap space or whatever the case may be, you know, the Chargers would be in and the Patriots would be in and the Dolphins and the Bengals and all of these teams would be in. And it wouldn't ruin parity because there's no evidence to suggest that the Patriots need the top pick in the draft to be great or the Browns benefit from having the top pick in the draft. Parity exists in the NFL because salary cap, restricted free agency, salary floors, and not everyone's like, oh, guys would just always go play for the Cowboys or the LA teams or the New York teams, but Joe Burrow wouldn't pick the Cowboys. They have Dak Prescott. Like, there's a limited amount of time in the NFL, so you'd go to the places where you could make your money and you could play, and maybe you would choose geography or coaching or a shot to win or whatever it would be, but I think it would be more interesting for the fans, certainly more fair for the players, and it wouldn't be a detriment to the teams in terms of parity. I'm not saying it will happen. I'm saying it should happen. What say you?
Well, I'm going to disagree fairly strongly, and I do agree that it probably would be more fun for some fans, but, you know, guys, what is it that makes the NFL so head and shoulders above any other professional sport we have? And some of it, of course, is just the game itself. We love the game of football. But I think that even bigger than that is that everything the NFL does is geared around trying to create as much competitive balance as possible. And there is no other sport where teams go from worst to first and go from bad to a Super Bowl in 2 or 3 years the way they do in the NFL. The scheduling is based on parity. The salary cap is based on parity. The draft is based on parity. And Danny, the problem with what you're suggesting now is, and maybe it's unfair to some teams who are better than others, but some organizations and front offices are just that much better than others, and they would do better in a situation like that. You know, and a perfect example is what you just said about Joe Burrow. You know, no, he wouldn't go to the Cowboys, but he sure as hell wouldn't go to the Bengals either, you know, because that's a bad organization. And so I don't feel bad for the Bengals, but I feel bad for their fans. So I think there are some arguments for what you're saying. But at the end of the day, I just think it would do more damage than it would do good.
I like it better when Hub gets really surly with you. I don't want to debate this, but I guess I will.
I don't think, Mac, I've never gotten really surly. I was a little annoyed when I think it was in our first interview, Danny wanted to anoint Aaron Rodgers as the greatest quarterback of all time. But ever since then, I think we've done really well.
He is the most talented until Pat Mahomes came along. I stand by it.
I'm just having fun with you, man.
No, and listen, what you're saying about the Bengals is true, but it would force them to be better and invest in coaches who could recruit players and player development. And the only reason I say it's not Like, people make it out like every year the top pick in the draft is the equivalent of LeBron James in basketball. Like, I'm not saying this in the NBA because, yeah, one player can make you a champion, but sometimes the third quarterback taken is the best quarterback in the draft. So there wouldn't always be this consensus for, oh, it's got to be Joe Burrow and that saves the franchise. Like, we have no idea. Maybe Jordan Love will be the best quarterback. Maybe Tua Tagovailoa will be the best quarterback. And maybe it'll be determined by which organization they go to that fits their skill set the best. So I like the idea of empowering the players to choose where they think is the best fit for them. And it wouldn't be, oh man, Joe Burrow has to go to the Bengals and now we're going to waste Joe Burrow's prime because the Bengals suck at everything.
Well, so here's a thought and a question. My thought in response is that they're just our owners and Mike Brown in Cincinnati, Jimmy Haslam in Cleveland, the Johnson family with the Jets. I could rattle off probably a dozen. They're not capable of being better. They need this help, unfortunately, or at least they have not shown that they're capable of being better. And then the other thing, Danny, is, I mean, if they did it your way, what would 55 million people watch over a weekend during the off season? You have to realize how big this event is.
Why not? Like, Joe Burrow, he does his recruitment, right? And he says, okay, my final, like, if you've ever played fantasy football and there's an auction draft, mm-hmm. you nominate a player and you're like, okay, Odell Beckham, the bidding starts now. And you go around the room. Like, eventually, so you do the high profile players, you do the guys that go for a buck or two, but everybody gets drafted just like if it was a snake draft, 1, 2, 3, 4, 12, and then back to one. So it could be, okay, the NFL draft, the selection show, right? Just like National Signing Day in college football. Joe Burrow's agent has said his final three teams are the Chargers, the Patriots, and the Bengals. There's three jerseys out there. And then the Roger Goodell, with the first pick, Joe Burrow selects, and he walks out in a Dolphins jersey. That's better TV than what we watched this past weekend.
Yeah, I don't know if it's better TV, but I get your point. I think you could make that argument. It's an interesting philosophy. I don't think you're going to get the NFL to say we're going to change to model fantasy football. But yeah, you're right. I hadn't thought about that. That, I suppose, could work. But, you know, Danny, you're messing with something that tens of millions of NFL fans love. So I'm not saying that philosophically you're wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen.
Hub, I appreciate it. I don't think it'll happen either, but I love running football theories by you. I love talking football with you. Thank you very much for the time, and you did great work over the weekend.
Thank you so much, guys. Everybody stay safe out there.
Thanks, Hub. You do the same.
That is the great Hub Arkish. We will be back. It is McNeil and Parkins on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Good to be back. Sorry for some technical difficulties that knocked us off the air for a few minutes. We apologize for that. And it's really unfortunate because Hub absolutely loved my canceling the NFL draft idea in favor of rookie free agency. He was just like, Danny is smart and innovative and creative, and frankly, I think not only is he a talented talk show host, he should run the NFL. That's what I think he said, Matt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Word for word, almost. It might have been a little bit longer.
It's a shame everyone wasn't able to hear him agree with me and just fall over backwards in praise for my thoughts.
Did our stick get hit? Boy, that's Kapakian, isn't it? Did our stick take one? What happened? Why did we get knocked off? Shep says it's storming like hell out northwest.
No idea.
No idea?
No idea. Okay. No, I have no clue. I'm still in my bedroom, and I just kept talking to Hub.
We just say, hey, fix it now. It needs to get fixed.
It was fixed in 2 minutes, 3 minutes maybe. It was great. Outstanding staff. A staff of thousands, even during the pandemic.
They could have had us on the air when I was laying out my theory. I'm just kidding. No, they did a great job. Yeah. Hub didn't like the theory. That's okay. These things happen. It's whatever. We're on the air, and Hub said it'll never happen. But thank you for the thought. He was very polite in his dismissal. But I love that he remembered a debate, Mac, that I did not even remember from what he said was the first time I ever interviewed him as a host on The Score, saying that Aaron Rodgers was the most talented quarterback I had ever seen. That one stuck with him almost 3 years later.
Yeah, I think it did with Dave Wannstedt too, but that, right, it's good to find out long down the road what you said that may have put somebody off.
Yeah, you can confirm that. Give me something to do there, Boy Wonder.
Come on, Boy Wonder. Test, because it was your Rodgers over Brady comment that promoted the eye tests when he was giving you that, like, oh, that's what it is, huh? The eye test, right? Don't pay any attention to those rings, just do your eye test.
Eye test.
I trust.
Okay, dear Boy Wonder.
Hey, let me run a theory by you if we have a minute here.
We got all the time in the world, man.
I thought we might have a few minutes. We're on until 6. The level of surprise with which our city met the dismissal of John McDonough yesterday kind of surprised me, and I'll tell you why. It's not just the Blackhawks thing. We're going to do some hockey, non-hockey here. Take a look at how all five of our franchises, all due respect to the littler guys in the periphery, but the five major franchises in town, salute, have operated going back for a little bit more than a decade, and you will see a definitive history in the status quo doesn't fly anymore. It's not like the old days with any of our five teams, I don't believe, where anything shy of a direction that looks like you can be competing for a championship at some point down the road is going to be viewed tolerable, and they're going to make changes. And the changes that all five have made going back to 08 have been colossal ones. They often have been unpopular ones. They've been risky ones, especially with the Bears, a willingness to move first-round draft picks in back-to-back years for both Jay Cutler and Khalil Mack. The Cubs hiring Theo Epstein and then Joe Maddon and then winning a World Series, that's a different way of Cubs baseball than what we were used to. The White Sox and what they're doing with their young prospects and getting them locked into team-friendly long-term deals before they even get there, setting a trend possibly in baseball in doing so. Even the Bulls cutting the cord with John Paxson, not completely, but taking him away from any duties of power and saying goodbye to Gar Forman. These aren't the old days. Nothing should surprise you from any of our front, any of the five teams in town at this point. There's just been too much evidence from all five of them that business as usual no longer is an acceptable maxim.
Well, okay, let's. That's an it's an interesting premise, but until they did it with Paxson, it was 18 years of not doing it that way.
I'm living in the present. I'm living on the 19th day of the Arturas Karnatsovas era.
Right, okay.
Today so is like, day 19, and we
okay, so less than 3 weeks into this new reality, now we can't be surprised by anything anymore?
That's like, right. Look at what they've done. Look at what Michael Reinsdorf did that none of us thought he was going to do. As long as Jerry was alive, people thought John Paxson was going to keep being King Bull. So even the Bulls, they have proven now that they're wanting to go in a 21st century direction. So nothing should surprise anybody anymore.
Basically, it's a expect the unexpected argument that if the Bulls can change, then anyone can change. And so if Paxson can be let go, then certainly John McDonough should not be a surprise. I hear what you're saying. They're just because they're all in Chicago doesn't mean all of those moves are related. And I think each one is unique in and of itself in terms of like what that organization has been willing to tolerate in terms of risk and like how big of swings they're willing to take. Right? Since the Ricketts family bought the Cubs from Tribune Company, it has been complete organizational overhaul.
Yep.
All right. The stadium, the spring training complex, the baseball operations, the business side, the hotel, the parking, the scoreboard, the rooftops, the television network, the budget, everything has changed. The Bears, Ted Phillips still there.
I know he is.
McCaskey family's still there.
But like, look at the – all right, that's true. And that would be another guy, by the way, who when he finally gets launched or quits someday, you'll hear a lot of the whisperings you've heard about John McDonough over the last 24 hours, and we still haven't talked about John Greenberg's piece in The Athletic today. We should get to that before 6 o'clock. But I understand that. But the Bears also have eaten contracts. If they fired coaches with contract time remaining in recent years. They hadn't done that in forever. Same thing with a general head coach. They've eaten contract. They never used to do that. They finally realized in 2009 they needed a franchise quarterback. Didn't work out with Cutler, but Jerry Angelo rolled the dice in March of 2009. Ryan Pace just did, 2 years ago with Khalil Mack. That's the type of stuff we never expected from the Bears forever. And yes, I'll feel better when Ted Phillips is gone. But from a business standpoint, they love him. And they should, because they are among the most profitable organizations in sports, because they have a fan base that continues to drink the sand thinking it's water.
I just think that all of these teams in their own ways have adjusted and adapted with the times to their sport. Some have just been leaders in it, right? The Cubs have been a leader in baseball evolution. The Blackhawks, once John McDonough got there and Kane and Taves, and they
Kane
started
and
winning.
Caves. It's been said many times, usually after Dan Carcillo slipped me medicine.
Magic mushrooms.
Magic mushrooms.
500 straight sellouts, right? Hawks, model franchise. Cubs, model franchise. And then Bears, Bulls, historic franchises with huge built-in loyal to a fault fan bases, and then the White Sox were this kind of hybrid of both, right? Where did some things really well, did some things not. Little brother in terms of popularity to the Cubs, don't have the same type of revenue, but Jerry cares so much more about baseball than he does basketball that you always knew that there was a commitment. You know, like he would do what he could to win on the South Side, and that fan base, even if it's smaller, incredibly loyal. So it's just, they're all different. And I guess the idea of being able to get yourself in a headspace to not be surprised by anything is a really tough thing for a sports fan when you never know what the outcome of a game is going to be. You never know what the outcome of a draft pick is going to be. Like, it's hard to wake up, was it Labor Day or Memorial Day? It was some holiday we were off, and starting a long weekend, and the Bears trade for Khalil Mack. Like, I don't know that I can ever get myself into the headspace as a sports fan and not be surprised by that. I don't know that any Cubs fan could get themselves into a headspace prior to 2016 and be like, they're going to win the World Series because they had never seen it before.
All right, fair enough. But let me just say this on recent years with the Blackhawks. It's been patently obvious there's been tension. That shouldn't have been of a surprise when the discussion a season, let's call it two seasons ago now, became, is it Bowman who goes or Quenneville? And it's Quenneville. You know there was disagreement over that. You know there has been some dissatisfaction with the way Jeremy Colleton has coached the hockey team. And I don't know if they've been healthy enough for a long enough period of time. And plus, you got some really young kids on this hockey team the last year and change. So it's difficult to get a gauge on how much progress Colleton has made as a coach. But you know there's been disagreement. You know you got some very strong personalities. When John joined us on the show the day after he fired Q, he was as on the muscle as I've ever heard him publicly. And I've seen him on the muscle privately. But on the air, and it wasn't at anything we said, he wanted to, unsolicited, dismiss the misnomer, I think I'm using that correctly, that Scotty Bowman is the guy who's running the Hawks. He went out of his way to tell us and got mad about it, not that we brought it up, but got mad about the idea that that perception is still being fueled in Chicago, because he said definitively he does not run the Chicago Blackhawks. Scotty is a part of our organization, but he's not running things. We rarely see him. So knowing that and knowing there's been disagreement over who goes, GM, head coach, the president, what's his role in all of this, and knowing John's a very hard-headed guy who I'm not a surprise to hear a lot of people now whispering he's hard to work for. He's a demanding guy. I would expect most leaders of big business to be demanding guys and occasionally ruffle feathers. What Carcillo told us earlier, if it's true about him getting upset with players for walking into his office for an exit interview and wearing sandals after working out, that's weird to me. Right, extremely weird that would be something that would bother John, but they should have known it by then that was something that was verboten in his world. Don't walk into Big Chief Blackhawk's office unless your feet are covered and you're clean. I would assume John was upfront about that. The idea that you got to kiss the ring is really, you know, that's an unpleasant thought if John became so fond of what he had accomplished there, that he expected people to bow to him. I don't know if that's true or not. It was one man's opinion, and Dan didn't speak for his teammates on that. He only spoke for himself.
Yeah, I think that, listen, I thought that Greenberg's column was awesome. I thought it was a different perspective on McDonough, and he made the point that if you talk to people who work for McDonough, they would not all say the most glowing things, which of course is true of many bosses and many demanding bosses, and that's fine. But that wasn't like a new thought. It's not like people were just coming out of the woodwork because he's fired. Like, Greenberg has tweaked McDonough about that stuff on Twitter often. So this isn't like a new thing that everyone is learning in the last 24 hours. I wonder what you think of this criticism. John McDonough understands the media. John McDonough had a lot of friends in the media, and so John McDonough was lionized, propped up, built up above what his actual merits did, right? Like, if Jerry Krause didn't get all of the credit that he deserved but thought he got more, maybe John McDonough got more credit from more members of the media than he really deserved because he was so media savvy.
That's possible. Yeah, I don't deny it. I've thrown bouquets in his direction because he has been, from a business standpoint, very accommodating with me. I hope I've been professional in my criticisms and my commentaries, I should say, about him over the years. I never once mistook my relationship with him for a friendship. I've never contested we were friends, but he is savvy enough to understand the media. Look, he knows your story. He knows Mully and Hawes stories. I think that's refreshing that we have a top-level executive in town who has that type of PR touch to deal with us, because he's smart enough to know we're nothing more than his conduit to his fan base. He doesn't give it. Those guys who have those positions probably don't give a damn about us. I'm okay with that. end of the day, I don't give a damn about them either. They're using us for things. We're using them for things. We use them for content. We want their teams to be good because more people are interested. So when they are good and they're nice to us along the way, we acknowledge those things. And over the years, yeah, I think there have been some things John has been given enormous credit for that were obvious, but it's not so easy as just plugging it in. And I've heard a lot of people suggest that, oh, he put the games on TV. Ooh, big, that was smart. Well, there's more to it than that. There's cutting deals. There's the maintenance of relationships with big sponsors, and John was fantastic in that capacity. He's a bit of a politician. He knows how to make people like him. He knows what people want to hear, and I think that's a skill. I don't think he should be criticized for having been media savvy, but yeah, maybe some of us have been a little bit excessively effusive in our praise. I've tried to balance it. When he fired Dennis Savard, in October of 08, I called him a snake on the air because I was friendly with Savard. Not friends, but friendly. And I thought he was a hell of an addition to the team when they made him the head coach the previous year. And I apologized to John a couple of months after the fact. I said I let it get personal. And it's a business decision you made. And sometimes the toughest ones, you know, are the ones that wind up being the most rewarding in the end. And that's what it wound up being. That was the right thing to do.
Yeah, it worked out.
Yes, it did. People wanted to hang that man for firing Dennis Savard. You can't do that, good old number 18. Well, he did, and how? Yeah, you're right. It worked out. Joe Quenneville is the second winningest coach in NHL history, and the Hawks won 3 cups under his direction.
There's a story in the news, Mac, that is the quarantine programming that we need, and it gives us an excuse to play some classic Score audio. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Mac is an alien, right? He's a beast. Yes. He's not of this world.
Not of this world. Mac, this is the quarantine content we need. We have released declassified government footage of 3 potential UFOs.
Oh, time to turn those lights out for me, Danny. You know I love me a little UFO conversation.
I'm here for it. I don't care if they're just distracting us from Lysol injections and pandemics and presidential politics. Like, let's go. Give me all of the UFO content. I've never been a big conspiracy theory guy, but everyone's getting a little stir crazy with staying at home and all of that. It's the right time. I feel like we should maybe give a guided tour of, Area 54 or something like that, and let's bring people in. Area 54? Studio 54. Area 51.
I was going to say, what are you talking about? You've lost me here.
Area 51. Studio 54. I juxtaposed the numbers.
Okay. Do you believe
in UFOs?
You
know about Area 51?
Yeah, vaguely, yes. Do you believe in UFOs?
I believe that there are things that people see that they don't know what they are. So, like, in the strictest definition of unidentified flying objects, someone sees something and then they can't identify them.
Trying to get one by you there based on literal definition. Yeah.
Yeah. So sure, I believe in that, but I don't believe that we've been contacted by aliens.
Well, I do believe that in the town of Blaine, Missouri, I think it was in the 40s, there was a spaceship that landed, and you could go there. You still see the crater where their spacecraft was parked, and it's the same temperature every day when you step in it. It absolutely is. And, I'm doing a movie bit, Danny, and it's not sounding like you're following me here. I'm doing Waiting for Guffman from the Christopher Guest collection.
You didn't go with me on Area 51. So
no,
okay.
You're right. You're right. We sucked to each other on that segment.
You know what could save us?
Yeah.
Doug Buffon on Aliens.
Heather said that you'll sit around and watch this TV show called Ancient Aliens.
Oh, I love it.
It seems like it's a bunch of bunk.
Let me say this, Patrick. Think what you want to think. I'm interested. You know why I'm interested? Because Big Doug saw one. And I got floored with one back in Pennsylvania when I was 12 years old. It came out of the sky, came zooming down, and my mother sent me to get some sugar from the neighbor. I'm telling you, this thing came flying down. It was a silver disc, and it was bright. And I remember hitting the turf and covering up my eyes, and I know he was hovering over top of me, and I didn't do anything. So finally, I turned around. I mean, that thing took off and left in the dark. Well, I didn't tell my parents because, you know what? Psychiatric word. You know, I'm going to tell them I did. I saw what I did. Think about this. How in the hell did, back in the day, did you build a pyramid or build all these buildings that they did without the tools? You try to tell me that all the stuff that was built within inches, they didn't have cement then. They put everything together. Those both blocks are 5 tons, 10 tons. Who in the hell did that?
Good question. It's a good question.
He's a believer.
I got no problem with that. Whatever you have to believe to get you through the day. I think that there are other life forms out there. I'm willing to concede that.
Well,
I just don't think that we've talked to them.
I kind of think it's a little bit arrogant to think we on Earth are the only things that exist, right?
It's a big place out there, space. I don't know that. Don't, right?
Are you writing the lyrics to Rocket Man here?
It's a big place out there,
like
man.
Bernie Taupin, it's lonely out in space.
I mean, I'm not doing Coast to Coast AM here. Like, it's not. Maybe that's the next radio gig. But yeah, it's when I see that sort of thing, and they release this, and anyone can Google it. It's a big story. All the networks are covering it. They've released 3 declassified videos of potential UFO sightings. It's like, yeah. Okay, I'm here for it.
In Cub Scouts, I took an interest in astronomy. It didn't survive. I did get an entry-level telescope. And before it was time to graduate to the next level one, I was out of the game because after about, I think I lasted about 3 months as a stargazer. And then I'm saying, okay, I've seen them. I'm good. I don't know.
You got it.
Yeah, I got it. It's like whale watching. I mean, once you see a whale breach from about 100 yards from your boat, you're good. You're covered for the rest of your life. It's the same thing with Saturn.
Seen one star, seen them all.
Yeah.
One constellation, same as the next.
Dare I say it's the same thing as Uranus? Sorry. Did you ever take up an interest in astronomy when you were in the theater?
Don't
Did you
pretend
ever
to
work
be
with a kielbasa?
When you go out into the wilderness and you look up and you see all those stars, it's kind of amazing. Like, oh, yeah, I can't see these in the city. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to do in the deserts or in the North Woods or something.
Clear night up in Northwest Ontario when you could see satellites moving across the sky. The air is that clean and clear, and the skies are that amazingly untouched by human hands and unhampered by sentiment. It's a beautiful thing.
Hey, Tanny, do you think this segment's going to win us any radio awards?
What's that?
Perfect. We will get back to whatever.
Sorry,
you
guys it is. Still talking?
Whatever it is we do around here. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.